Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, the impact of medical debt on healthcare access for those affected, and an interview with members of the Palestinian Truth Tour. But first, these headlines.
IndyMedia.org reports that the city of Barcelona was shaken on Thursday the 10th as thousands of people took to the streets in a day of protest against the killing in Iraq and the permanent war. Many businesses were closed following a call by several anarcho-syndicalist unions for a general strike of 24 hours. Actions continued until the late evening. Since the early morning, groups held protest actions in front of banks and chain shops, shutting down many of them and convincing others to participate in the general strike. Around midday, large groups of people, often forming spontaneous demonstrations, converged from all sides onto the city center. There, at least 10,000 people started a loud and colorful cacerolazo demonstration, banging on pots and pans, lamp poles, and police cars, and setting up mobile sound systems. Protest rallies were held in front of a big bank, which is involved in the arms business, at the stock exchange, and at the Ministry of the Economy.
This headline was taken from www.indymedia.org. While the media states that Baghdad has fallen to the U.S. troops, and while the U.S. and U.K. military superiority in the region has been established, new transports of tanks and helicopters from U.S. bases in Germany are still on the way in the Gulf region via the harbors Rotterdam, Netherlands, and Antwerp, Belgium. Activists successfully blocked a number of transports by locking themselves to the rails near Venlo and forcing a train to return to Germany. Authorities were unable to wait out the activists as the train was too wide to simply wait there without blocking oncoming traffic.
CorpWatch.org reports that private military contractor DynCorp is vying for a contract to engage in peacekeeping activities in post-war Iraq. Pentagon officials have already expressed a preference for private forces over UN troops. Quoted, "We know we want something a little more corporate and more efficient with cleaner lines of authority and responsibility," unquote. But some have raised concerns over the level of responsibility of private military contractors, particularly DynCorp. Illinois Representative Janice Schakowsky expressed her worries this way. Quote, "Is the U.S. military privatizing its missions to avoid public controversy or to avoid embarrassment? To hide body bags from the media and shield the military from public opinion," unquote. DynCorp has a history of abuses, from spraying dangerous pesticides on peasants in Colombia as part of the war on drugs, to allegations of trafficking in women in Bosnia, to defrauding the U.S. government by overbilling. DynCorp has not yet been offered any contracts in the Middle East.
The Village Voice has collected a number of stories that the U.S. government, despite its best efforts, has not been able to suppress. Following is a brief summary of some of the not-quite-censored facts as reported on VillageVoice.com. First is shooting suspects. Quote, "The fact that at military checkpoints, U.S. troops are shooting at civilian vehicles which they think contain enemy fighters, in one instance killing an entire family at once," unquote. Killing babies. Quote, "This is what happened in the Iraqi town of Hilla last week when the U.S. launched airstrikes on Republican Guard positions, killing an estimated 33 people, including 11 civilians. The proof is a photo of a baby wrapped like a doll for burial, and interviews with doctors and survivors in Hilla who confirmed that the injuries were caused by bomb shrapnel," unquote. Next is using cluster bombs. Quote, "On April 2nd, Human Rights Watch has asked for a ban on cluster bombs near Iraqi civilian areas, citing the many injuries they caused in the Gulf War. British Defense Secretary Jeff Hoon admitted that the Allies have been using cluster bombs in Iraq and called them justifiable," unquote. Numbing pilots. Quote, "Could some of the bombs dropped accidentally on civilians and allies be the work of sleep-deprived pilots?" On April 3rd, the Washington Post raised the issue, noting that U.S. pilots are allowed to take up to 60 milligrams of Dexedrine a day, which tends to postpone sleep. Harassing foreign reporters. Quote, "U.S. soldiers detained a group of foreign journalists as if they were spies. In an interview with Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, Israeli TV correspondent Dan Shimama recounted trying to stop U.S. soldiers from kicking one of his one of the journalists in his group after the man pleaded with the soldiers to let him call his wife and kids. The lieutenant in charge later told the journalists, quote, "Don't mess with my soldiers. They are trained like dogs to kill, and they will kill you if you try again," unquote. And last is bombing media facilities. Quote, "On March 29th and 30th, U.S. missiles hit the Ministry of Information in Baghdad, the former home of international media, damaging equipment and wrecking the tent village on the roof. On April 2nd, U.S. planes landed 4 direct hits on Al Jazeera's headquarters in Basra," unquote.
That wraps up headlines for today. Thanks to Kevin for coordinating them and to Kevin and Scott for reading them. You are listening to IMC Radio News here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This program could not exist without this radio station. For those that tune in daily to the WEFT Courier, you know that WEFT's support of programs like Democracy Now! And Free Speech Radio News provide one of the few precious local venues for alternative perspectives and coverage of the news. But perhaps even more important is the opportunity that WEFT gives for local voices to be heard on topics of interest to the community. This program, produced by volunteers at the Independent Media Center, allows citizen journalists to make news that states their views, to report on events that are important to them, and to speak out on issues. But IMC Radio News can only provide that forum so long as WEFT is on the air, and that can only happen with your support. Over 80% of our operating costs are paid by you. Your contribution keeps us running and keeps a diversity of voices from being drowned out by the monotonic hum of corporate radio and corporate news. So please give us a call at 359-9338 and pledge your support. Next, Kevin Heinrich brings us the following story on medical debt and its effects on healthcare access.
On Thursday, April 3rd, at the Champaign Public Library, Champaign County Healthcare Consumers sponsored a community forum on the issue of medical debt. The forum included a discussion of the results of a study of the consequences of medical debt on 3 communities: Champaign, Illinois, Miami, Florida, and Alexandria, Virginia. 4 organizations were involved in the creation of the study. The first is the Access Project, which is affiliated with the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. This organization was formed in 1998, and it described its mission as strengthening community action, promoting social change, and improving health, especially for those who are most vulnerable. Robert Seifert, who is the policy director of the Access Project, was on hand to discuss the growing national problem of medical debt as represented in the study. The next organization was Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, which was founded in 1977 and describes itself as a nonprofit grassroots citizens action organization dedicated to the mission of healthcare for all. CCHC is founded on the premise of participatory democracy and the belief that meaningful change in healthcare in the healthcare system will come only with the active involvement of consumers. Representing Champaign County Healthcare Consumers at the forum were the organization's executive director, Claudia Lenhoff, and community activist Brooke Anderson. The next organization which contributed to the study was the Human Services Coalition of Dade County, Florida. This organization describes itself as working to create a more just society by promoting civic engagement, economic fairness, and access to health and human services. And the last organization was the Tenants and Workers Support Committee from Alexandria, Virginia. This organization was formed in 1986, initially in response to the mass evictions of 5,000 low-income Latinos and African-Americans from a neighborhood in Alexandria, Virginia. The study itself identified a number of rather serious consequences of medical indebtedness, including inability to obtain needed medical treatment, difficulty in paying other essential bills, and even bankruptcy. And surprisingly, the study found that severe economic hardship related to medical expenses was not limited to the extremely poor or the unemployed or even the uninsured. Many people with full-time jobs and health insurance found themselves unable to deal with excessive medical expenses. And then the forum also provided a space for community members to relate their personal experiences with medical debt, and Champaign County Healthcare Consumer Counselors were on hand afterwards to help community members on an individual basis. Claudia Lenhoff then described what is special about medical debt and what makes it more serious than other sorts of financial difficulties.
Healthcare, after all, is not like any other business and should not be treated as such. Medical debt is involuntary debt, and consumers have no control over the timing or amount of their indebtedness. You don't know when you're going to have a car accident and suffer an injury, or when you're going to get cancer and have to deal with that, or other kinds of illnesses or injuries.
Robert Seifert then related a rather alarming statistic on just how widespread difficulties with medical debt actually is.
Something like half of personal bankruptcies have, as a significant factor in the bankruptcy, medical bills, either actual medical debt or else lost income as a result of some medical care that was required.
And even more surprising is the fact that those who are least able to pay are actually the people who are asked to pay the most.
And the interesting thing about this is that these people, particularly the uninsured people, who aren't represented by an insurance plan, are billed usually at a much, much higher rate than insurers are. Insurers tend to reach negotiated agreements, as I've just mentioned, on discounts off of a hospital's regular charge.
In addition to the risk of bankruptcy and discriminatory pricing, another serious issue consumers face when dealing with healthcare is the excessive aggressiveness that collection agencies sometimes employ to collect medical debts when working on behalf of hospitals or other healthcare providers. Brooke Anderson relates a rather disturbing local story.
I was talking to somebody from a woman's place, and she was telling me about a client that she has who has cancer. She's dying. The doctors have said she has probably 2 months to live, and because she's involved in that health system, they tagged her as being in the same household as her husband, who also happens to be her abuser, the reason why she's staying in the domestic violence shelter. And the hospital contacted her and said, "We want to try to help you pay off your husband's debt." And they're contacting her now because they know that she has 2 months or so to live, and they want to squeeze as much of that money out of her, and clearly she has no resources, otherwise she wouldn't be in a shelter.
Brooke Anderson then explained to IMC interviewer Clint Popetz some of the things healthcare providers can do to make paying for healthcare less overwhelming and difficult.
The Medical Billing Task Force of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers takes sort of a twofold approach. There are immediate things that the providers could do today without going to state legislature, without taking a huge rearrangement of their business practices. Then there are more long-term solutions. So the short-term things, absolutely, they should cease denying people access to health care. They need to work with consumers to make reasonable payments. One of the things that we've heard when we look at the pattern of bills is that the hospitals will sometimes just take the total bill and divide it by like 10. Because they want their payment in 10 months, and not taking into consideration the resources that people have, the overall scale of the debt. So they need to work out reasonable payment plans. And then they also need not to report medical debt to credit bureaus. Another thing is making their financial and collection policies public. I mean, you asked, what is their policy? And if you don't know, how do you hold them to that? How do you make sure that they're doing things fair? And then treat people with respect. I think we're all human. At some point in our lives, all of us have to interact with the healthcare system, and we ought to be treated with dignity and respect.
Brooke then went on to describe some legislation pending in the Illinois Senate, which, if passed, will make life a bit easier for Illinois residents facing medical expenses.
The Discriminatory Pricing Reform Act, it's Senate Bill 552 right now, and what this would do is address the issue of discriminatory pricing that Bob was talking about earlier, because right now uninsured patients are paying 2 to 3 times more for their health care than patients who have HMO coverage or who are using government-subsidized programs like Medicare or Medicaid. What this bill, Senate Bill 552, would do is prohibit hospitals from collecting more than the cost of services from patients who whose income is below 300% of the federal poverty level, or whose income or who spend more than 20% of their income on medical expenses.
If you're interested in learning more about the issue of medical debt or about healthcare issues generally, you can contact Champaign County Healthcare Consumers at area code 217-352-6533, or you can check out their website at www.prairienet.org/CCHCC. And this is Kevin Heinrich for the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Thanks to Clint Popetz for interviewing Bob Seifert and Brooke Anderson, and thank you for listening.
Normally you'd hear catchy music here to allow you to ponder how great it was to hear local voices reporting on critical issues, but there's no time for that. We need your help. We're in our pledge drive here at WEFT, and we need your help to keep the station running and to keep critical examination of important issues on the airwaves. Community radio provides one of the last places where dialogue and debate can educate and where new ideas are born. So please give us a call at 359-9338 and help keep this program and others like it available to our community. We depend upon you, and we're asking for your help. That's 359-9338. Coming up next, an interview with members of the Palestinian Truth Tour, conducted by Peter Roloff and produced by Sam Packard.
Members of the International Solidarity Movement, a Palestinian-led movement of activists working to raise awareness of the struggle for Palestinian freedom and an end to Israeli occupation, organized the Palestinian Truth Tour, which came to the Channing Murray Foundation yesterday. After the presentation, Peter Roloff sat down to talk with the participants. They touched on quite a few things, beginning on how they see the media bias on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
I definitely think that the bias of mainstream U.S. media is definitely leaning towards the Israeli side of the story. And it tends to, when it covers the situation, a lot of times it talks, when it is talking about the Palestinian side, it focuses on suicide bombings. And I feel like that is a tactic in order to support the myth that Palestinians are terrorists and to gain a lot of support for the occupation that's going on. And I feel like when this situation is addressed through the mainstream media, it's really downplayed so that people here don't understand how incredibly horrible the occupation actually is for the people who are living under it.
And I would just add one specific way in which the media in the United States covers differences, has a disparity in the way it covers the issue, is that often you will hear about Palestinians die, whereas Israelis are killed. Usually when you hear about Israelis that have been killed, they have a family, they have a name, whereas Palestinians, it's often just a number. You know, you'll often hear 9 Palestinians died, as opposed to, 3 Israelis named X, Y, and Z with, this many children each. And often that is not presented on the Palestinian side.
They also had quite a bit to say about human rights abuses in the region that have gone virtually unknown, and they go on to tell their stories about their own experiences during their visits.
What they refer to as a curfew, we refer to as a home imprisonment, like I said. What happens is they'll oftentimes send jeeps through the city that might blare out there's curfew. And what that means is no businesses are open, nobody is allowed out of their homes onto the street. It can last for, 24 hours, it can last for a week. They close all the schools, and people have no way to get out without being threatened.
And I just want to add on to that it is actually, it's house imprisonment 24 hours a day of the entire civilian population. It's a form of collective punishment that is strictly prohibited by the Fourth Geneva Convention. There is a lot of human rights abuses, and people don't have basic human freedoms that we take for granted. For example, all the Palestinians living under military occupation are denied freedom of movement, are denied regularly their right to education. Their homes can be searched at any point in time without a warrant. They can be arrested and imprisoned without charge or trial. There are a lot of their systematic collective punishment of the entire civilian population, and people are very often punished for crimes they have not committed. And I would say I definitely agree with what Flo said in terms of a typical university student, but it's also imagining that your entire life you have lived under a military occupation and faced tanks and shooting and have watched many, many of your friends be killed, injured, your city taken over and controlled by an army, your entire future is devoid of possibilities because of the military occupation. The occupation attempts to squelch all hope, all future possibilities. And so I think it just becomes this unbearable, this enormous weight of having witnessed so much oppression and so many violations of fundamental human rights.
And as far as hope and resilience of the Palestinian people, it's amazing. And it's something that I talked with people that I became friends with over there, telling them how incredible I thought they were for the strength that they had in face of what is being done to them. And people told me they have no choice. You know, if they don't hold on to their strength and keep living daily life, then it's over and the occupation has succeeded. I have one really good friend there who works with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, and which is the paramedical unit in Palestine. And I would work shifts with the ambulance service from midnight until 8 in the morning. And we would, when we weren't out in the ambulance, we would sit in the office of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society and wait for phone calls to come in. And he would all night long be joking, laughing. And one night we were in there and a Jeep pulled up outside the office and stopped so that its exhaust was pointing into the office and blew all of the exhaust into the office. And he made me get down on the floor because he was afraid the soldiers would begin shooting at us. And while we're sitting on the floor, he was laughing, joking around and laughing. And I said to him how incredible I thought it was that he was living under occupation as a medical worker. He faces faces death just by going out to pick up patients, and that he can sit there and laugh and joke around. And he said to me, you know, if I don't laugh, I'm dead. I have nothing else.
And this hope really manifests itself quite often in in demonstrations. If I can just give an example of one demonstration I was at in Palestine in January, it was a children's education demonstration. And so young elementary children from various schools all came together on the street holding signs saying, people of the world listen, or education is a basic human right. You know, all things imploring for their right to education. And then two children spoke, and they talked about how all they wanted was education and their basic right to go and to be free. And it was by far the most beautiful thing that I saw when I was in Palestine. Just these young children that have lived their lives like this, realizing the need to have, you know, nonviolence resistance in some way and make their voice heard.
And I just want to add on to that I think that's part of the media stereotypes and stereotypes around Arabs and certainly Palestinians, is this idea that they're terrorists, and that's the word used a lot. And in fact, Palestinians have a very long tradition of nonviolent resistance, and there are a lot of cities and the civilian population is nonviolently resisting because they are moving when they are being denied freedom of movement, because they are organizing all kinds of nonviolent demonstrations, because they are removing roadblocks, they are fighting for this right to go to school. And that is something that the American public really, really needs to know, that every single day, the large majority of Palestinians are doing nonviolent resistance.
They went on to talk about a variety of subjects, and in the end, they had a lot of great things to say. Sorry I couldn't bring more of them to you. But you can always visit the website at palsolidarity.org. That's www.palsolidarity.org. And you can learn more about the International Solidarity Movement and the struggle for Palestinian freedom. Thank you for listening, and this is Sam for IMC Radio News.
That wraps up this week's edition of IMC Radio News. Contributors include Kevin Heinrich, Peter Roloff, Sam Packard, and Scott Harris. Archives of this program are available on the UCIMC website, www.ucimc.org. You can become involved in the production of this program. Just email radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. This is the recorded voice of Clint Popetz, returning you to the live voice of another Wefty to tell you how you can help support community radio during our pledge drive. Take care and see you next week.